The Israel Report with Rolien Marks.
Hello, Rolien, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. And you, Benji? I tell you, you are just sunshine at the end of a day. What can I say?
So much sunshine in the studio because outside is a bit rain and cold. So, you know, these things happen. And not such a sunshiny list of stories today, Rolien. Starting off with some Chabad emissaries who've been attacked in Nairobi.
This is a terrible story, and this is a Chabad emissaries, a rabbi and his rebbetzin who are serving in Nairobi, were attacked and beaten during a violent robbery. This happened on Tuesday night, and this is Rabbi Shmuel Notik and his wife Chaya were beaten. They were tied up at Chabad house in Nairobi by a gang of about five robbers. And it's not just them that were attacked, but also there was some yeshiva students who were there, who were on site, who were also attacked and tied up. And the gang threatened the rabbi and his wife that they would attack him and his family if he did not cooperate. Now, authorities are looking at this as more of a criminal event rather than driven by anti-Semitism. Of course, you know, today with rising anti-Semitism and a matter of weeks after the attack of the chief rabbi of Argentina, you know, our immediate instinct is to wonder if this is not, you know, somewhat more different than to a criminal attack. You know, our thoughts and prayers are with the rabbi and the rebbetzin and the yeshiva students to heal quickly. Also, what we know is that the Foreign Ministry of Israel have confirmed that the case is being handled by the Israeli consul in Kenya. They are involved. They will try and help the rabbi and his family as much as possible. I don't think he's Israeli. You know, reports coming in that he is an American rabbi, but our Israeli consul general on the ground there in Nairobi, he will assist as much as possible. And he apparently had no valuables to give his gang of assailants other than his siddur, his prayer book, and lapel pin along with the shofar. So, you know, he didn't even have any valuables. That was all that he had to hand over. It's a horrible situation, and we're hoping for a speedy recovery.
Yeah, certainly our community can sympathize with someone who's been a victim of violent crime. Now, to something more international, Jared Kushner, he sort of pops up. He's like a mole, you know, and he just like arrives and to say something and then goes back underground. He's saying that the Trump peace deal is going to require painful concessions.
Well, first of all, we're waiting to hear more about what is being dubbed the deal of the century. What I can tell you is it's the longest gestating plan in history, and this is Trump's highly anticipated peace plan for the Middle East. So what he has said, and we don't know too many details, what we do know is that details of the plan will be released after the Muslim holy festival of Ramadan. That is a month long. And Jared Kushner, who is both the son-in-law and an advisor to U.S. President Donald Trump, has said that both sides are going to have to make difficult or painful concessions. You know, we wonder what concessions we are going to have to make from Israel's side. The little that we do know about the proposed Trump peace plan is that they're not using terms like Palestinian statehood, but rather things, terminology like autonomy and using a more bottom-up approach rather than the top-down, which has been the traditional way to broach peace in the Middle East. In fact, President Trump saying that he actually doesn't like the terminology two-state solution. You know, they say that this is a terminology that hasn't resulted in anything concrete and long-standing, that this is a situation that seems to go round and round in circles, and it is time for a fresh approach. And the Trump administration reckons that their approach is fresh, it's unique, and it's very different than what has been put on the table before. In fact, the old traditional talking points that we used to, security, Jerusalem, water, some of those issues have, like Jerusalem, have been taken off the table. And Kushner did mention that the Arab Peace Initiative of 2002 was the last time we would have had a possibility of any kind of peace, but he says they are going to do something different. They're going to use a completely different approach to this. So let's see. And he ended off his very, very brief discussion on this by saying, let's see if the leadership on both sides have the courage to make progress. Now, while we haven't heard from the newly elected prime minister, who's the longest serving prime minister, so he's not that newly elected, Benjamin Netanyahu, his opinions on the Trump peace plan. We have heard that he may be naming a town in the Golan after President Trump, and we've heard that from Mahmoud Abbas and his administration that they reckon that the Trump peace plan is dead before it's even birthed. So I think the biggest challenge that the Trump administration is going to have is getting the Palestinian administration to some kind of negotiating table.
I agree with you. I think it's going to be a very tough thing, but maybe there's ways of getting them there, or maybe you don't give them a choice. I don't know. I think the biggest problem Netanyahu has at the moment is what to call this new town. You know, there's so many, you know, what's he going to call the town in Trumpy McTrump face or Trumpy Stun or Trumpville?
I definitely don't think Trumpy Stun. So, the money or the bookies have it. It'll probably be named Kiryat Trump.
Kiryat Trump. Well, I'd like to know from listeners, what do you think we should call the new town of Trump? In the Golan Heights, 0618951019 or 34519. What should we call, the new town? I think, Kiryat Trump is one. But there must be a more fun way to call this town. Maybe Big Orange Town, Little Orange Town. I don't know.
Well, if Tel Aviv is the Big Orange.
Yeah. It's true,
then would this be the Little Orange?
I don't think
points
Trump would.
Points to ponder, Benji. Points to ponder.
Trump wouldn't take that seriously at all. Back to Africa, Ro. We spent some time in Kenya. Now to Ethiopia. The families of the victims of the crash, there's still no access to the remains of the deceased.
Well, this is a story that's particularly horrific. You know, I do have some personal ties to the story, which I'm not going to go into on air. And I've had I don't want to call it the privilege, but I've worked very, very closely with one of the families of the Israelis who perished in the Air Ethiopian crash. And we also have a South African connection in that the extraordinary Zaka South Africa were on site very, very soon after the Air Ethiopia plane crashed to try and help with the recovery of remains efforts there. And Zaka at the time expressing a lot of frustration that they weren't able to get access to the crash site. And now, nearly 2 months after this horrendous crash that killed 157 people, including the pilot and the crew, as it took off en route to Kenya from Addis Ababa, still making headlines in the Hebrew media today that the families have yet to receive their loved ones' remains and belongings. And a lot of complaints coming from the families that they've been down to the site and the remains of their loved ones not being treated with any kind of dignity. In fact, they say that any bones that have been found have just been wrapped in plastic that's found on site and given in, and that personal effects are exposed to the elements and also to looters and animals. And, you know, it's treating their deceased loved ones with incredible indignity. And the head of Zaka, who's also just the most extraordinary man, I urge you, if you're anywhere near Google, not on your phones while you're driving, people, but if you are in an office, to Google Yehuda Meshi Zahavi, is the head of Zaka. And he said that Zaka are prepared to go back after Pesach to try and continue with recovery efforts. And they're even prepared to buy the land of the crash site so that they have that access and can bring home these loved ones with some kind of dignity. And Zaka are known for their extraordinary work all over the world. In fact, there's a newly formed organization or website I've seen called Christian Friends of Zaka. So, you know, that shows that just how thoughtful and extraordinary the organization is, that they have now got friends and respect from other religions who have taken note of the work that they do. But Yehuda Meshi Zahav saying that Zaka is prepared to buy the land to make sure that they can bring relatives, their loved ones, home and give them the closure and the dignity that they deserve.
Absolutely, Raleen. Thank you. That's where we're going to leave it for today. Thank you for giving us Israel Report. We'll chat to you again tomorrow.
Tomorrow. We'll chat tomorrow next week, because it is the end of Chag. So, Chag Sameach, everybody. I hope you've all had a good Pesach, and I'll chat to you again next week.